Albert O. Hirschman showed us that one of the arguments for capitalism, quote unquote, prior to its accumulations, triumph, which is what I call it. Let's say what it does, not give it this mystical kind of illusory force of science. No. It's just power getting all the resources of the planet in its own hands, out of ours. So prior to its triumph, one of the arguments, he says, for capitalism was that the interests tamed the passions. And then Hirschman, with de Tocqueville's help and hopefully Polanyi's, showed us what chasing money would mean, the demolition of society and opening the door to tyranny, which did not wait for further invitation, opening the door to people for whom power was the issue, never money solely. And they give themselves props for that. They think they're noble for that. Shakespeare told the truth. An abyss is an abyss is an abyss. Lust is lust is lust, whether it's for power or whether it's for dollars. But money only seems to tame the passions. In reality, it provokes a frozen rage, as money becomes the sole nexus, as Marx told us, between man and man, forcing us all to manifest, embody dehumanization against our better selves. And even when we know this isn't what we want to be, we are caught in the structure of society itself. Asking why commodification is a species of rule, which we will when we discuss Miklos, is the same as asking why dehumanization is a species of rule, which is the same as asking why rank is a species of rule. Are these merely tactics of control, necessary psychological slopovers or slopovers of the psychology? The cause, longing, will, need, absence of self, the effect, causing hardship for our brothers and sisters. It's not want and hardship that is the worst misery. The worst misery is knowing, as, and I'm quoting here, Usman Sembang, misquoting Usman Sembang. It's knowing that there are people who want you to be cold and hungry. That's the worst misery. We'll be talking a lot about that when we talk about Miklos. Causing hardship for our brothers and sisters by ensuring their dependence, making them beg, making us beg. There's enormous rage in that, and hurt and pain. Why do they do it? To ensure our thoughts are captured, denuded of all challenge to the logic of rule, so they can feel safe. I'm sure there was a certain amount of trial and error in the settling on these tactics, which were long since systematized, transformed into a science by Plato and his predecessors in the study of rule. We talked about on an earlier show, his debt to Egypt. And Egypt, I'm sure, had its debt little by little, this knowledge, if you want to call it that, of how to suppress us, how to control us, began. Plato systematized it. We can't be done with democracy until we have our thorough discussion of class, how class has deformed us from our nature, our inherent respect for freedom. Absent scarcity, that's the key. Abundance must be made the structural reality globally. So perhaps the question is, what is rule and where did it come from? This need to dominate and control. Where did it come from if not the abandonment of children? The dispassionate, heartless dispensing with dispatching of our sisters and brothers screams loudly of the truth of what was done to us. Abandonment writ large in ruthless acts. And as Alice said, the cutting off and distancing from the weakness of one's childhood. captured, that book, that experience, trapped in those legacy thoughts on which we are now shining the calm and loving light of truth. All roads lead back to that abandoned child and the need to prove one is good enough to keep. And when I was young, I thought, most peoples of color did, I think, that it was all that cold and snow that invoked such a bitter need for more. And when we discuss Miklos and begin with the memories of Fatima, when we begin with a child's sense of this from Morocco, we'll see this, and no doubt climate played a role, but not a determinative one, as we see with our Inuit brothers and sisters. No. And then I thought, it was slavery that caused the rift, the death of good fellowship. And this too was implicated, but not determinative, as many in the southern realm of caste knew the slave market very well. It was Plato. Plato who said to those seeking knowledge, seeking to stand with the wise, keep only the best and abandon the rest. And so today, we're living with that sad and most ill-false advice to those who seek to stand among the learned. And when I say we still abandon our children today, I don't mean on the steps of orphanages. I mean we abandon them to pursue success with the wage, with pleasing the state. And that's what power seeks to impose on the rest of the world. That is the essence of its totalitarian vision. No allegiance, but to the state. All roads lead back to abandonment and the inability to blame one's parents, the state. And this answers Terence Hopkins' question too, by the way, as to why rule in the European nation-state system was so competitive. But now we are freeing ourselves of the thought of our fathers. And today we have what Popper didn't. We have Nicola and all of our brothers and sisters globally to teach us, to show us the possibilities inherent in freedom and the exponential speed with which the evolution of humanity can be accomplished once we get power off our backs. But with the frothing fangs of fascism at his back and on the march, it may be that Popper didn't trust fully enough that each human being wants to strut their stuff, wants to get big, to continuously learn. And the more we learn, the more our hearts open. And the more our hearts open, the more we want to learn. Relearning how to see authentically helps us re-embody that toddler energy that was crushed under class. And this business of getting free is a relay race, not a sprint, as the saying goes. And when Popper lets go the wind, the true service, de Grazia, picks it up again.